there was a god anywhere in this world, I believe the chance would come my way. Early in 1948, a rumor spread through camp that the Japanese prisoners of war were finally going to be allowed to go home, that a ship would be sent to repatriate us in the spring. I asked Boris about it. "It is true, Lieutenant Mamiya," he said. "The rumor is true. You will all be repatriated before very long. Thanks in part to world opinion, we will not be able to keep you working much longer. But I have a proposition for you, Lieutenant. How would you like to stay in this country, not as a prisoner of war, but as a free Soviet citizen? You have served me well, and it will be very difficult for me to find a replacement for you. And you, for your part, will have a far more pleasant time of it if you stay with me than if you go back to endure hardship and poverty in Japan. They have nothing to eat, I am told. People are starving to death. Here you would have money, women, power, everything." Boris made this proposal in all seriousness. He was aware that it could be dangerous to let me go, knowing his secrets as I did. If I turned him down, he might rub me out to keep me from talking. But I was not afraid. I thanked him for his kind offer, but said that I preferred to return to Japan, being concerned about my parents and sister. Boris shrugged once and said nothing further. The perfect chance to kill him presented itself to me one night in March, as the day of repatriation was drawing near. The Tartar had gone out, leaving me alone with Boris just before 9 o'clock at night. I was working on the books, as always, and Boris was at his desk writing a letter. It was unusual for us to be in the office so late. He sipped a brandy now and then as he traced his fountain pen over the paper. On the coat rack hung Boris's leather coat, his hat, and his pistol in a leather holster. The pistol was not the typical Soviet Army-issue Monster, but a German-made Walther PPK. Boris was supposed to have taken it from a Nazi SS lieutenant colonel captured at the Battle of the Danube Crossing. It had the Lightning SS mark on the handle, and it was always clean and polished. I had often observed Boris working on the gun, and I knew that he kept it loaded with 8 shells in the magazine. For him to have left the gun on the coat rack was most unusual. He was careful to have it close at hand whenever he was working, concealed in the drawer of the right-hand wing of his desk. That night, however, he had been in a very good, very talkative mood for some reason, and because of that, perhaps he had not exercised his usual caution. It was the kind of chance I could never hope for again. Any number of times I had rehearsed in my mind how, with my one hand, I would release the safety catch and send the first cartridge into the chamber. Now, making my decision, I stood and walked past the coat rack, pretending to go for a form. Involved in his letter writing, Boris did not look my way. As I passed by, I slipped the gun out of the holster. Its small size fit my palm perfectly, its outstanding workmanship obvious from its weight and balance. I stood before Boris and released the safety. Then, holding the pistol between my knees, I pulled the slide with my right hand, sending a cartridge into the chamber. With my thumb, I pulled the hammer back. When he heard the small, dry sound it made, Boris looked up to find me aiming the gun at his face. He shook his head and sighed. "Too bad for you, Lieutenant. But the gun isn't loaded," he said after clicking the cap of his fountain pen into place. "You can tell by the weight. Give it a little shake up and down. 8 7.65mm cartridges weigh 80 grams. I didn't believe him. Without hesitation, I pointed the muzzle at his forehead and pulled the trigger.